The Man in Line. Daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio from midday till 1, Monday to Friday.
Good afternoon, it's 7 minutes past 12 midday. The COVID numbers on Friday were as follows. Total number of tests, 19,325. Concluded tests, 19,324. Just one person waiting a result at 4 o'clock on Friday. 48 people waiting for tests. Total number of active cases, one isolated individual. Looking around the world, can you imagine what everyone else thinks about the Isle of Man? Well, just to run things through for you, a week today, the 21st, Alfred Cannon, MHK, the Treasury Minister, is going to be here. This coming Wednesday, David Ashford, MHK, Health and Social Care, and Henrietta Ewart will be along. And today, it's the Home Affairs Minister, it's Graham Cregeen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you. COVID has put strain on all our essential services. Which essential services does Home Affairs run?
So what comes under the department is police, fire service, civil defence, prison and probation service. And as part of my role as well, I was also chairman of the Communications Commission.
In the middle of all COVID, lockdown, prison sentences, did you make sense of it at all in your head, or was it was a dream world for most of us?
I think it was one of those things that sort of I just transferred into Department of Home Affairs just as we got into COVID. So going into a new department and then having to deal with all what was going on, the whole 10 weeks, it was pretty hectic all the way through, for Council of Ministers and Tynwald going through all the legislation. So it was a very busy time.
And a state of emergency as well.
It is. I think the public of the Isle of Man, when it was announced, we now have a state of emergency, it was the public that took that on board. They realised how serious this situation was. And it possibly made, how the police and everybody else behave was because the public took it so seriously, and I think that's why we're in the position we are today, is because the public actually went, this is serious, and they took it that serious.
Did the police ever experience any pushback from the public at all?
I think occasionally there was a few people who they didn't just go out and say, right, you've breached COVID. There's a lot of processes in between that, and occasionally they would get a couple of people having a kickback on that. But I think generally, from the constabulary's point of view, I think they dealt with it well.
I was going to ask you that. What's Home Affairs relationships with the constabulary like at the moment?
It's very good. I have regular meetings with the chief constable, and there's clear separation between the department and the constabulary. The chief constable deals with all the operational stuff on there, and we supply him with a policy that we wish.
Because we're virtually COVID-free, just one isolated individual and everyone, it seems to be going rampant everywhere else. It seems to vindicate our policy of custodial sentences, sending people to jail. Now, you were the minister in charge of all that. How did you feel about that?
Well, the courts were the ones that dealt with the sentencing. The police were dealing with the enforcement of it. But talking to colleagues in the UK, some of them wished that they'd done exactly the same as we did, that by putting those sentences there, it was a deterrent for people. And I think we had about 47 people who were sentenced to prison. But generally, the public of the Isle of Man really dealt with this well.
I mean, we got a bit of flack in UK papers, the Doncaster 6, the Swansea 3 and people like that. And we gave people custodial sentences. So you feel it's vindicated now. We are where we are because of things like that.
I think it is. And people were given warnings. For those cases that you spoke about, when people come to the Isle of Man, by coming through our borders and our borders were closed, we are trying to protect the population of the Isle of Man, And, you know, like you said, you know, the situation that we're in now at the moment, and, you know, touch wood, coming into Christmas, you know, I think there's many jurisdictions out there, you know, we're in envy of them all.
A question in just saying, can you explain what's happening to, is it called the Emergency Services Hub? What's happening?
Right, so before I came into the department, they were looking at a emergency services, so that's police, fire and ambulance, all being put in one place. So it's a blue light hub project. And I was sort of very sceptical of this big scheme, because many years ago, government went and bought the Quarterbridge pub site for an expansion of the fire service. And, you know, so to me, a development round there for maybe the fire and the ambulance service seems sort of more appropriate than having this big hub. You know.
So is the fire station going?
No, we'll always have a fire station.
But I mean, that's that iconic site on the Peel Road.
No. Well, we're looking at business cases for it. And, you know, what I've said is that I'm not convinced at the moment that it's the right thing to do is have this one big hub. And what I'm asking them to do is have a look at whether we can have a fire and ambulance, possibly, say, down at the Peel Road site.
Right, because the ambulance is at the back of the hospital at the moment, yes, isn't it?
Yes, and when you look at the Peel Road site, you know, what fantastic access it has into the centre of town, to the south, you know, out to the west. It is sort of an ideal situation.
So the overall proposal would have been, if I'm right, to put ambulance, fire and police together.
Yeah, in a different site.
In a different site.
Yes.
Crikey, what would happen? What had happened to the police headquarters?
Well, this is the whole thing that we were going to be looking at. It'd be a new police headquarters, a new fire and new ambulance.
And you're not convinced?
No, because it's a very expensive scheme, as you can imagine. But what we've got to look at is that the positioning of that hub, how is it going to give access to, you know, the major conurbations around the island?
Last week, the new probation centre opened as well. How do you view the probation service?
I think what we've got there is that there's a transition for people there. And, you know, the initial project, they were looking at maybe taking 6 people in there. They've doubled that to 12 now. And that's giving support to people who've been in through the system. And from the opening there, I think it's gone really well.
And obviously, getting people, anybody who's on probation, and of course we have to put this in an island context, is that if somebody has entered the judicial process, if somebody's entered the custodial world, people will know.
Yes.
People will know. So you do have to turn people's lives round in the probation service. Is it on target? Is it doing what it's supposed to do?
I think there's always more work that you can actually put into this about it's how you deal with rehabilitation. And that's a big piece of work that's got to be carried out. And you can always try and improve on that. But I think this is a good step that we've moved forward on Tramode House. And of course, you know, it was nice to sort of have part of that reopened in memory of Bill Mullarkey, you know, the previous minister.
Graham Krajean, MHK, is on with us today. Russian member, 14 years now.
No, Arbury, Castletown and Maloo.
Oh, I'm reading another piece of paper at the moment. 14 years.
Yes, it's time flies.
Do you remember when you were elected?
I do.
Do you remember why you chose to become an MHK?
I do. And part of it was that it's quite interesting that you're always, you know, prior to that, there's people who will complain about how things are happening, what's not happening, you know. And part of that was, you know, well, somebody, you've got to do something about it. It's no use just complaining about it. And, you know, it was one of those, right, well, you know, you've got to do something about this.
Do you remember the moment you suddenly decided, you went from one side of the paper to the other and just thought, I'll get some nominees. I'll get people to nominate me. I'm going to have a go.
Yes, it was one of those areas that when you first start thinking about standing, and then it's trying to get your policy together, what you really want to try and achieve. And I would say back in 2006, when I stood, I never ever thought I would be the longest serving member of the House of Keys. And, you know, because previously those people who'd been in for 30 years and, you know, I sort of topped you and Watterson by about 10 minutes. It's like twins. One's always been in there a bit longer. So, But it's one of those things that to put a job description, I don't think anybody who gets into politics really realises how much of your life it actually takes over. It really does take over your life.
If you want to get in touch with Graham Curjean, you can call 66 13 68, email studio@manxradio.com, or text 166 177. You are a minister. You had ministerial responsibilities before, education, sport and culture before Home Affairs, but you are a constituency MHK as well. How do you view things in the constituency at the moment?
Well, I think there's a lot of development going on in the constituency at the moment. So you've got the development going ahead in Castletown. You've got, I think it's 300 plus houses going ahead in Ballasalla. I'm really pleased that we've made a start on Castle Rushen High School. You know, that's one of the things that I'd put out there that I wanted to achieve, was to actually get a new school, because anybody who goes round that school will realise that it is really past its best before. So, you know, during my time, I was really pleased that we were able to push that forward. So the playing fields have started on that now. So there's lots of stuff that's going on. There was the development that was supposed to be going out at Knock Rushen, and it was one of the things that I'd said to the previous Minister for Policy and Reform, when they brought forward the Castletown Housing Land Review, that it really needed to have that public inquiry, you know, so that public could have their say. And the planning application went in, and, you know, the planning appeals inspector sort of concurred that it needed a public inquiry.
How can you square that enormous development in Ballasalla with the situation regarding post offices at the moment? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think it's quite clear where I stand on the post office, because back in 2016, when the then board of the post office and the executive were talking about corporatisation of it, and, you know, I said that it's not right for the Isle of Man. They brought a fella in, a Mr. Toimy, to come in and review the post office, and he was recommending corporatisation. And
I remember this. It wasn't privatisation, it was corporatisation.
It was corporatisation. Yes. And, you know, I went and spoke to the then chief minister and expressed my concerns about it. And he echoed my concerns. And it was really surprising. A week later, I was dismissed as chairman of the post office for expressing those views, that I had concerns where the post office was going. And, you know, during my Tynwald speech on it, I mentioned about what had happened in Jersey. You know, and what they'd done in Jersey was they'd reduced the number of sub-post offices. They'd gone from a six-day week to a five-day week. They'd reduced the pay of the postman. And look where we are today on the Isle of Man.
So what will happen with the post office? Is it just a slow, long decline of post offices and sub-post offices?
And that is the way it's looking at it. And, you know, it is a concern because, you know, there's a lot of people who value that. And I understand the numbers of people going into those sub-post offices has reduced over the years. But it's a service to the community. And you can't just take that away. Not everybody is digitally enabled. Not everybody will have their own transport to get them off. And those are parts of the community that sort of will be missing.
And also, people have got to take their return parcels somewhere as well. And everybody's taking return parcels back nowadays. And Isle of Man Bank, of course, as well now, with post offices seemingly set to disappear and two branches of the bank going as well. So, Castletown, how do you view? I mean, crikey, what's happened there?
Well, I think that was a big surprise because, you know, over the COVID period, you know, Isle of Man Bank, they said that was a bank that they could keep open because of, you know, the bigger banking hall. It had car parking back, the rear entrance, it also had, you know, so it worked for them during that period. And I think it was a huge surprise to everybody that they announced that they were going to close it.
Is it because I think the Peel and Castletown branches, they own the freehold, so they can sell them, and the Port Erin branch is leased. So presumably, if that lease comes to an end, Port Erin's going to go.
Now, I didn't know that I thought they owned the one in Port Erin.
Let's hope so.
But yes, so they own the one in, I know they own the one in Castletown.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's...
So that will be straight on the market as soon as they're gone, presumably.
You can probably presume that that's what they're going to do, is put it on the market. From talking to them, they said they've already had somebody approach them for it. But I think it'll be a great loss there. But, you know, I have been speaking to Lloyds Bank, and Lloyds are now putting some services back in there. I know that they're in the Commissioner's office. I've spoken to Lloyds, and hopefully in the new year they'll be they'll be going to Morton Hall, so that people can try and access some service.
Yeah.
It won't be cash services. It will help people sort of with their accounts and maybe sort of online services.
Mm. Graham Krajeem with us today. Gwen sent us a note in and just said, why have the sirens gone?
Right, so one of the things that they had with the sirens was that they were getting old, and the parts of them for replacing them and maintaining were getting harder and harder to find. We've now got a app called Everbridge, and what you can go online, you can sign up for it, and you can get phone calls, you can get texts, you can get emails, and it can be quite specific about, you know, your area. So, and you can choose how you want to receive those messages.
You have to sign up, don't you, for
them? Yes, yeah. Yeah. And it's quite interesting, sort of. So say for instance, you had a situation like Laxey. So the people in Laxey, they could be quite area-specific.
Okay, so so Gwen, the sirens were old and they couldn't be. What's happened to them, by the way? Have they been taken away?
I think they're still on the buildings.
Yes. They were fairly, like, every quarter. It was 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning. They always used to go away. So, Gwen, what you need to do is sign up for the notifications, and the various notifications,
yes,
aren't they? So,
yes,
flooding, yellow warnings, overtopping, yeah, and stuff like that.
And it was quite interesting. On the last day that they were supposed to sound, the one in Ballasalla didn't go off.
There we are. This is for Graham Krajeem. Would you concur that the Isle of Man's current drug laws are outdated and need significant changes in order to properly protect public health and society, which is what the Chief Constable recently said? Did he say that?
I can't recollect those exact words, but I'm on a substance misuse committee, and it's areas that we are looking at. And so, you know, I think it's two meetings so far. So we are working on it. And, you know, Mr. Hooper's got a motion down on possibly it'll be Wednesday.
Oh, well, you're Home Affairs Minister, and it's right in the middle of this. Where do you stand on recreational cannabis?
Well, I think what you've got to do is you've got to be real careful on this because of our obligations. Because the last thing we want is for recreational cannabis to be on the Isle of Man. And then as soon as you go over into the UK, then you're committing an offence. And do you really want that sort of tourism like they have in Amsterdam?
I mean, is that the Home Affairs? Is that the official line on
no,
it?
No, no,
that's
no.
Just your view?
Yes.
Okay. And medicinal cannabis as well?
Well, I think medicinal cannabis, DfE, are actually working on that with health. So that is getting progressed.
Okay, all right, thanks for that. More notes in for Graham Krajeen. Let's see, is this true? Paul sent a note in for Graham Krajeen. The Quarterbridge pub was bought to be demolished for the proposed new oval roundabout. Were there plans to extend the fire station? The ambulance station was about to be moved to Peel Road from Nobles, and a brand new fire station proposed between Onken and Douglas. Is that right?
I'm not sure about that.
Or is it a Manx rumour?
I think there's recollection that there was going to be, I think they called it the Disney about many years ago, and this is around about the size of a football field that was proposed with four lanes and all sorts going at Quarterbridge.
Oh, well, everybody's got their own view of how to go around Quarterbridge, and not everything always coincides. So let's just hammer this down then. The super emergency hub, so police, fire and ambulance won't be congregating anytime in the near future.
No, well, the thing is, when you look at the capital projects for the next few years, I would be surprised if you had any big blue light hub within the next sort of 8 years.
Speed limits now. Here we go. This is Kim, who just said, what about the speed limits, Ballasalla, St Mark's, and also the Castletown hump, as it were, getting rid of the rally? Where do you stand on speed limits?
Well, I think what we've got to do is we've got to see what's proportionate in there, because there's some areas there that, when I've spoken to the Department of Infrastructure officers there, that some of our speed limits are inappropriate for the areas, because if you look at some places there, single tracks and it'll be de-restricted. And I think what we have to do is have a full review of you know, what speed limits are appropriate for what areas. You know, I think some of the areas that we have to address is sort of, as young drivers, how do we deal with that? Because, you know, there's one thing having an R plate on your car, but it doesn't actually restrict what your car speed your car can do. I know we say that it's a 50 mile an hour on it, but maybe one of the things that we should be looking at is actually putting a restrictor on there for somebody who is on an R so that the car does not go over that sort of speed.
Let me make a sweeping generalisation then. And you mentioned young drivers. Let me mention young male drivers and hot hatch drivers. And obviously, there was a big crash at the weekend. Somebody went through the side of a building as well. How do we, and the vast majority of people don't speed, but obviously we're getting stuff in St Mark's, Ballymother Strait, and around certain urban areas as well. How do you get to those people? How do you get to the people? The same, you know, it's always a minority. They're the people who litter, the people who on Douglas Head throw McDonald's cartons out at 2 o'clock in the morning. How do we get to those people?
There's a number of campaigns that I've seen out there, and some of them are quite harrowing, sort of, when people have lost young family members. And, you know, how do you continue to put that message across to people that, you know, please be careful. It could be you. You're not going to be immune. I think most of us will remember sort of when we were 17 and 18, how you seem to think that you're quite invincible at those sort of ages. But I think what we have to do is it is this thing about continue to educate. And like I said, it may be a thing that we need to do is to start looking about, you know, as a young driver, about limiting the vehicles. Because one thing I wouldn't like to see is saying, oh, well, you can only have a vehicle with a certain engine, because not all families can afford to have a vehicle that a young person can learn to drive in. So maybe by having some sort of electronic limiting, it to having some device in there that would record, you know, your speed would be helpful.
Okay. Jan dropped us a note and just said, is there any update that the minister can give us on nursing home in Ballasalla?
I'm afraid that's under investigation, so there's nothing I can say regarding that.
Do you think that'll be opening in the future at all?
From what I heard, it's the doors are shut at the moment. But on the investigation, I'm afraid I can't say anything on that.
Okay. We talked about the prison sentences for COVID. This is from Phyllis, who just says, is it true? What's the segregation for people with COVID in the prison? Are they segregated?
They were, yes. So what happens if somebody goes in? There was 14 days.
And they're all. Is there any COVID in the prison at all? Do we know, or was there ever?
The only case that we had was one of the ones that you previously had said that somebody had gone in with it, and they were segregated.
All right, 12:30. Loads of texts and emails in for Graham Crigine. If you want to get in touch, you can call 66 13 68. The Home Affairs Minister of Arbury, Castle Town and Maloo, MHK, Graham Crigine, is on with us through to one on The Man in Line today.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint. Who can tell me the simplest way of buying car insurance online?
I know this.
Voice one.
Go to rossgower.com.
Go on.
Choose your car, enter a few details and get an instant quote. You can buy online and print out your documents immediately.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Yes, rossgower.com is the best way to buy insurance. No question. Ross Gower Group Limited is licensed in Guernsey by the Guernsey Financial Services Commission.
This Christmas, you can share with Sure. Grab one of our sharer plans and you can share your unlimited data, calls and texts with up to 4 members of your household from just £12 extra per person per month, and with everything itemised and sharing on one simple bill too. Switch to Sure this Christmas to save or upgrade your account now. For more info, pop in store or visit sure.com. That's sure.com. And remember, you'll always get more from Sure.
The best of Sainsbury's and the best of local. Christmas together at ShopRite. Traditional turkeys and roasts, or vegetarian and vegan. Truly memorable meals, from spectacular starters to delicious puddings. Festive food and drink that brings families together. Quality and freshness from our Manx farmers. Exciting choice and amazing value from our famous national partner, Sainsbury's. Let's make it Christmas together, only at ShopRite. proudly locally owned.
Pretty pink duvet set.
It's not for me, it's for my mum. A Christmas present. Nice drill.
I know, a present for me. I love Southern Home and Garden Store. And with Christmas coming up, I can find lots of gift ideas.
Oh, yeah. Where else can you buy a duvet set and a drill and things for the garden? So, do you come here often?
All the time. It's my one-stop shop for homeware, DIY, pets and garden. Everyone should go to Southern Home and Garden Store, Balfane Estate, Ballasalla.
As we make our way through December, we've already had lots of big winners on the Manx Radio Advent Calendar.
So the question, Josephine, is, in the bleak midwinter, what kind of wind made moan?
Frosty wind.
Ooh. Bang on.
The Manx Radio Advent Calendar, powered by Waltons.
And we've still got lots of big prizes to give away, including more ShopRite vouchers, £50 to spend at ttshirts.com, and a BoomPod speaker from Shure. Plus, each winner receives a digital radio from Waltons. Just keep listening for the next door to open, and you could be a big festive winner here on the Nation Station.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Graeme Cregeen, MHK, is with us, the Home Affairs Minister. Police recruitment, are we up to speed with recruitment?
During the COVID period, we were falling a little bit behind, but I understand now sort of the recruitment's now picked up the speed. It was nice to be at the sort of the cadets had a graduation, so it was nice to be able to see sort of new officers getting out there.
Why do we recruit policemen from off-island, by the way?
Well, I think there's a mix in there. You know, so what you've got is that we train our own up, and you know, there'll be people who will be applying from the UK or further afield to come over here to the service.
Now, what do they call special constables now? Is it community policing?
No, special constables.
Special. What's community policing then?
Well, community policing is where the police officers are now... A number of years ago, we had community police officers. So they were your specific police officers that you would see round on the beat on a daily basis. So that's now been reintroduced. So we were hoping that this would have been brought back in earlier in the year. But, you know, with COVID coming in, we're now getting that back up to speed. So people will see that a certain police officers round in their area. So it's not that they're just responding to crimes, so they're actually walking around and driving around their communities.
So there are still specials, are there?
There are still specials, yes.
Well, okay. Now, the operational services of the Department of Home Affairs includes the Alaman Constabulary, Emergency Planning, Civil Defence, Alaman Fire and Rescue Service, Prison and Probation, and the Communications Division as well, your Communications Commission.
So I've got Communications Commission and Communications Division.
Oh, Lord. What's the difference?
So the Communications Commission is a regulator for telecoms and for like yourself here. The division is a very important part of the emergency services. And what they do is they take your 999 calls. So they do the call handling, and you know, it's a real vital part. And there's a number of places that actually look at the Isle of Man because they've got police, fire and ambulance all dispatched within the same room. And I've been in there a couple of times, and they're dealing with people who've dialed 999, and at the same time they're coordinating across all the services to make sure that you get the appropriate response.
Okay. Alan just said, are all the fire stations or retained fire stations around the island secure? Are there any more to be got rid of?
There's no plans to get rid of any. There's a couple that they're always concerned about themselves. And I went round the fire.
And they are?
Well, Kirkmichael and Laxey, they're always concerned about whether the department is sort of looking at rationalising and doing without them. And there's no plans to do away with either Laxey or Kirkmichael fire stations.
Okay, Graeme Cregeen with us. And regarding, here's one in from Malcolm who just said, regarding your Communications Commission role, have we got to the bottom of the Manx telecom problems earlier this summer?
Yes, they did. So they came to the conclusion on that. But from, I think it's tomorrow or Wednesday, I will no longer be the chairman of the Communications Commission.
Who's going to be chairman?
We're having an interim, so there's going to be an interim chairman, so that's going to be moving on this week.
Department's also responsible for establishing and maintaining the Police Consultative Forum, the Police Advisory Group, Parole Committee as well, and informal consultative bodies like the Licensing Forum, Firearms Consultative Committee, and also the Department for Home Affairs, which you're in charge of, supports the activities of the Drug and Alcohol Strategy Group and the Safeguarding of children's group, and that's something that's come to the fore as well. Safeguarding children, attitudes have changed certainly over the past 20 odd years or so. Where do you see that going?
It's moved on a lot over the last few years, and it's all departments are engaged, and it's everybody's responsibility to ensure that you've got safeguarding procedures in place. And through the department, where you know we are playing an active part in that. And it's ensuring that all our services are having, we've got policies regarding safeguarding.
Obviously, the one name that looms large at the back, in the back of all that, is Notfield.
Yeah.
And making sure, and of course, there was almost a denial. There was almost and often that's the case, in that people who go through those horrendous situations want to forget about them, don't want to talk about them. But times have moved on.
And you know, there was a select committee that was looking into that, and I think there's still sort of recommendations coming through from that. And you know, I think you know, there's a lot to be learned from that select committee.
Simple one here from Steve. Take or leave this one. How about doing something about appalling driving regarding speeding?
Well, it's one of those things that sort of, I think, people's abilities tends to run out, doesn't it, when they're driving. And I think, you know, what we've got as a situation is that people always go and say about the locals, but, you know, there's a lot of people sort of on the island who have driven in other jurisdictions.
Muriel's got a question in for Graeme Crugine. Do you think our prison or prison in general works? How many people return after they've been released? How many people go back to crime after they've been released?
I think that's part of what we were talking earlier about. What do we do about rehabilitation? And you know, the prison service is doing a lot about rehabilitation, and I think our figures are quite good on that. But you know, we can always do better. And you know, you continue. How do you catch everybody in there and make sure that you know they don't come back in? I think it's very difficult for a number of them that people will say yes, that you're going to get your repeat offenders. But you know, we are looking at all different ways. You know, one of the things that we've got now is tagging. So you're able to see where people go. You can geofence it, so you can make sure there's areas there that, you know, if they go into, that there's a warning that goes off that you shouldn't be in there.
Where does that warning go off?
So what will happen is we've got a through the prison probation service, so they monitor that, and they'll be aware of you know, the system that goes on.
So is that in real time, or does the person get it on a Monday morning?
No, it's sort of within a very short period.
Oh, so if somebody goes outside that geofence, a message will pop up on a probation officer's phone.
And so it's all recorded that way.
Okay. John in Onken, this is for Graeme Crugine. Assaults on police and other emergency service workers appear to be on the increase. Does the minister think that the lower sentencing, such as fewer custodial sentences, have an impact on this? Is there any plan to increase sentencing for attacks on emergency workers?
Right, well, now what we have is we've now got body cameras for police officers. So when you see police officers out and about, they'll have their body cameras on. And it's surprising sort of when you're talking to officers, how it gives a bit of reassurance. And also to the public that, you know, this has been recorded, what they're doing. Sentencing, that goes down for sentencing guidelines through the courts.
Okay. Does Home Affairs recommend sentencing at any sort of level?
Well, the courts decide what the sentencing is. It's got nothing to do with the department.
It'll just be through legislation that's laid down.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the progress on the border force?
Right, I've been really pleased with this because it was one of the things that coming into Department of Home Affairs that I was keen to see progressed. We did notice through the Chief Constable, he was saying that we'd had a large increase of interceptions of drugs. And that just goes to show sort of people were using other means rather than coming either through the planes or on the boats. And, you know, coming into the new year, hopefully, you know, the ports will have those border force in place.
And that'll be a Home Affairs and department.
So you'll have possibly the Constabulary, Customs and Excise, Immigration.
All together?
Yes.
Coming under your umbrella?
Well, come under an umbrella.
Will they have their own uniforms, or will there be a new Border Force uniform?
Well, I think one of the things that we really need to do is to show people that they are, you know, Isle of Man Border Force. You know, one of the things I would like to see is that they actually do have that identification on them. And it works as a deterrent as well.
More questions in for Graham Cregeen as well. The role of the justice ministers, what's going to happen? Is this rubber stamped in Timbald? Is it this week, the justice minister?
No, what's happened is it's just the title of minister with responsibility for justice. So this is a we're looking at a new role. So one of the issues was that you dealt with criminals. So some of this is who's going to be seeing how you deal with civil justice, and it's somebody, a direct person with responsibility to report possibly to Timbald on.
This is a touchy one, so we'll be interested to hear. How does the Home Affairs Department deal with corruption in the constabulary?
Well, the thing is, you know, if somebody believes there's corruption going on in the constabulary, if it gets reported, so there is a process that they will go through. And as we've seen in the past, you know, external bodies have been brought in to investigate this. And one of the things that we've got coming forward next year is Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire Service will be coming over and doing a review both of the constabulary and the fire service.
How do you view corruption within the constabulary or police or prison service?
Well, I think one of the things is it's very disappointing is in those enforcement office positions that you've got people who do break the law, and you know it does bring sort of the profession into that sort of thing where you're maybe losing some lack of trust.
It doesn't make your job any easier as well if you're trying to enforce justice and people to be law abiding. If that happens,
and it doesn't, and you know, so as much as you put things in place, you know, it's individuals.
Graham Cregeen with us today. Crikey, loads and loads of questions in. Muriel got back and just said, "Do you think prison works?" Simple question.
I think it does for some, because they realise that. You know, what they've done has put them down that path, but I think that rehabilitation is vital to it. And you know, I could ask that: do you think that, you know, because we've put people in prison because of breach of COVID, you know, that's sent out a strong message, and you know, people in other jurisdictions think they wish they had those sort of powers because, you know, maybe they'd be in a different position now.
Do you think prison's there to punish or to rehabilitate?
It's there to rehabilitate, you know, and it takes away your liberties. So it's a mix.
Right, back with Graham Cregeen in just a few moments' time. If you have a question, text, email, or you can give us a call.
On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love bought for us 12 fencing panels, 11 copper piping, 10 bricks for laying, 9 showers pumping, 8 cement mixers, 7 bathroom mirrors, 6 slabs for laying, 5 bright chrome handles, 4 panel doors, 3 augers, 2 tap hole basins, and a Haldane Fisher bathroom.
You'll find everything you need to improve your home at Haldane Fisher. See online or visit your nearest branch in Douglas or Ramsey.
When you need a fitting memorial or headstone for a loved one, contact Manx Memorials in Peel. This long-standing family-run Manx company offer a wide range of granite and marble headstones and memorials, along with an island-wide inscription and renovation service. Manx Memorial's skilled professionals will take the time to help you choose a suitable memorial, and we're proud to say we'll beat other local quotes. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
Making life easier. The ARC Help at Home Centre. Buy or hire independent living equipment with a free assessment from in-house healthcare professionals, or find a home help or handyman, all at ARC Help at Home Centre. Family carers receive free training. ARC also provides accredited first aid and mental health courses, plus many other courses for health and social care professionals at competitive prices. Call 205 701 or visit the ARC Help at Home Centre, Carls Lane, Tramode.
Typhoon House, happily working to keep you working, whether from home or the office. we can keep your printer or copier fleet running in tip-top condition, whether there's a problem or simply making sure you don't run out of toner. Typhoon House also supply and install new devices, which are more efficient and cost-effective for you and your business. Call 661-331 or email typhoon@typhoonhouse.im. Typhoon House.
Manx Radio, your Christmas station. This is the Isle of Man talking.
Good afternoon.
The man in line.
Thank you. Stephen, good afternoon. You're with Graeme Crigine.
Oh, good afternoon, Minister. Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, Andy. What I'd like to ask the Minister is, concerning the Border Force, is there an intention to withdraw the Isle of Man from the common travel area arrangements, whereby everybody can travel within the common travel area without hindrance or being asked for ID to be shown? Is this a major change? Has there been any consultation? Will there be a full consultation with the island's population? Is this in effect declaring independence? Because I don't believe there's any clamour within the island to become totally independent from the UK. So I think this has bigger ramifications than what we currently expect from the issue. And I'm very concerned and opposed to withdrawing from the common travel area.
Right. Good afternoon. No, we're not considering removing ourselves from the common travel area. But anybody who's travelled through some of the airlines will have given some proof of ID when they've been boarding a plane. I think one of the issues
I could reply to that, my understanding is, and it's been commented upon to me by MHKs, is that that is an airline policy. Some airlines, if you're travelling without luggage, etc., don't require you to show ID. So it's not true to say that all airlines, or there is from the Civil Aviation Authority a requirement to show ID. It depends upon the carrier.
Yes, and that's why I said that some of the airlines had asked for ID. What I would say to you is, do you think it's appropriate that people can travel to the Isle of Man and we don't know who's actually here? And if they've had, is there a position where we need to be aware if there's people who are coming here for unlawful activities?
Can I reply to that, Andy? No, I don't agree with the Minister at all. There is no requirement for anybody to show any ID. We have to assume that people have lawful intent and innocent until proven guilty. I don't accept that this premise that if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. The similar could be said is, if you have nothing to hide, there's no requirement for the state to require you to prove who you are. I don't believe that everybody that travels to the island is the possible criminal.
No,
I think
didn't
that's
say that.
a nefarious argument to use, and quite frankly, not one worthy of a minister of state of any country to suggest.
I didn't suggest that.
So why are we having the Border Force?
I think one of the issues that we've got is that currently what we've got is a situation where if somebody is coming to the Isle of Man for illegal or some intent, that where do you do that security check? That, you know, what we found was, like I said earlier, was that there's been a huge increase of drug interceptions from the constabulary. These are means that sort of had possibly previously come through the ports.
Well, if I can reply to that point, this is another major issue. It's a major policy issue that really needs to be addressed. Saying that we're going to introduce draconian ID checks in order to stop a particular policy is slightly bizarre, because alongside this, there is a major policy change that many people around the island want changes on the drug law. So on the one hand, you're saying we want extra precautions to impose further checks because of drugs, and yet there's an other set of people that want a further relaxation of the Ireland's drug laws, and we don't want our young people to become criminalised for very small possessions of drugs. Now, it's known that some people take alcohol for recreational purposes, and it's the same. It is known there are some people that use narcotics.
Okay, all right, Stephen.
Yes, I think one of the other points I said was that this is actually going to include customs and excise and immigration. And you know, when you're talking about people with small amounts of drugs, the usual policy has been that the cases that you've seen in court, it will not have been the first time that they have been dealt with by the constabulary.
Okay, thank you, Stephen, for that. Before we get to another call, I just want to say this is Christine who said, talking about the post office, Mr. Crajean said, we have to remember that not everybody's digitally enabled. And then he was talking about the removal of the emergency sirens so we can all sign up to an app. How does that work?
Well, I think the issue that we've got is that, like I said, that the maintenance of these sirens had been an issue. And of course, depending on where you are, you know, the sirens are only area specific, so there'd be large areas of the Isle of Man that were not covered by the sirens. That, you know, and it's that fine balance. I understand about not everybody being digitally enabled, but this actually, if once you've signed up, it can actually have a phone call to your home.
Okay, Ryan, you're with Graham Crajean on the air.
Hi, Graham. I was just listening to the last caller who raised the point about their security being brought in at the port, and then the counter-argument about unsavoury people wanting to bring through stuff into the Isle of Man, or, you know, not knowing who's on the island. But if I was a criminal and I was bringing drugs into the Isle of Man, I would certainly not bring it through the steam packet. I would use one of our many unsecured harbours or bays late at night. This is an absolute farce. It's going to cost God knows how much money to put security on. I mean, look at the security at the airport, but if we put it on at the sea terminal, for what? For what reason can this possibly be?
Well, I think you've raised a very good point about our ports. Well, you know, maybe part of this role should be that we're actually checking those ports. That, like you said, that is somebody coming in through one of our harbours with that. So I think it's how you balance that out.
Will the border force just be at the steam packet?
No,
it's going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
So would that be able to go to any ports where they thought there was something going on, yes. Ramsey, Peel, anywhere else?
Well, the constabulary can do that now, and customs.
Okay, Greg, oh, here's a message in. This is from Alison, and just said, how do you view your time at Education, Sport and Culture?
I really enjoyed my time at Education, Sport and Culture. You know, we did an awful lot in there during that time. We brought in, we doubled the amount of preschool vouchers. We brought a quality control in. We've been able to move forward with the Castle Rushing, and there was the QE2. We did the move from St Thomas's up to Valageilt. We put in a system which would give young families on low incomes a full maintenance grant. So we brought £7,500 worth of maintenance grant in to help people send their young people off to university. So, you know, there was a lot we done. And we also brought over an international educationalist who started reviewing how the department worked and how we actually ensured that it wasn't just academic areas that we were looking at. We also had to address those with vocational qualifications, because I think for a long time, young people have been sort of pushed more towards being academic rather than vocational.
Did you give Dr. Allinson any advice?
Well, I think one of the issues that you've got there is when you've got a change coming in. I think Dr. Allinson has realised that with the teaching unions, it's been quite challenging. And, you know, that's still going on. So we're 8 months on. So,
And just a quick one. Is there going to be a public swimming pool at Castle Rushing?
Well, one of the things I tried to get with all the Southern local authorities was to put a public swimming pool at Castle Rushen. We desperately need to have that public swimming pool there, because, you know, where are you going to teach your children to swim? And I think it's a big community area. And that was one of the proposals that we actually put with the new Castle Rushen High School. And it was going to have a hydrotherapy pool in there for the school as well. So I think it's vital that we actually have a public swimming pool there.
Arbury, Castletown and Maloo. I'll just tattoo that on my forehead now. Graham Cregeen, MHK, Home Affairs Minister. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you as well. Have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year and a better 2021. Thanks for being
and
with
to everybody
us.
Else. Thank you.
3 minutes to one. Stick around for late lunch on the way, and thanks to Barry Redfern on production today.
WINT.